Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Well, we have been talking about a graphic which rates dog breeds according to a number of criteria: intelligence, health, lifespan, appetite, and so on, and compares that with their popularity. Now, based on these results, it then classifies the dog breeds in four quadrants: overlooked treasures, inexplicably overrated, rightly ignored, and hot dogs, which means rightly popular. So it certainly makes for interesting reading. Now, I'm sure it would be pretty controversial for some dog owners, so I'm delighted to have in studio to share his thoughts on dog breeds and other updates on animal care, Pete Vetterburn, better known as Pete the Vet. You're very welcome to the show, Pete.
Thank you.
So first of all, Pete, you shared this graphic on your Facebook page. What sort of reaction did you get?
Well, I got a very mixed reaction. And I think the first thing I'd say about this is that really it's largely a bit of fun more than a very serious guide to choosing a dog breed. Yeah. And it just makes some interesting points. And it's worth reading. And it does give, I suppose, novices some sense of what's true about various dog breeds out there. But when it comes to choosing a dog breed, I really would have moved a little bit away from saying this breed is great or this breed is not so great. And I'd be saying to people, look at the individual animal. Don't get focused. Too many people get very focused on a particular breed. Like, I want to have a boxer and that's it. I will take nothing else. Yeah. Or I must have a Siberian Husky. That's the only dog for me. Yeah. I mean, really, more than that, you should be saying, well, you know, which individual dog suits my needs best?
Yeah, but Pete, if you say which individual dog and you go and, you know, you go to somewhere where they're giving away six dogs, can you tell much about the personality just there and then by kind of looking at the animals?
To some extent you can, to a large extent you can, but I think a challenge for a lot of people is they don't have experience in doing that. Yeah. So the best thing to do, what I would think, is to actually go to a really good dog rescue, an organisation, somewhere like Dogs Trust, where they have loads of experience in matching dogs and people. Okay. And they can tell from just observing you and your reaction to an animal and the animal's reaction to you, they're very good at sorting out what sort of animal suits what sort of person.
Okay.
And of course, they are rehoming animals, so their interest is in creating a successful match. Yeah. They don't want it.
They don't want you coming back.
No, exactly. They want to say goodbye to that dog.
You were here last week. Yeah. We don't want to see you again.
No. They want you to get a dog that loves you, and they want you to have a dog that really suits what's happening in your life. Yeah. And the big thing is about getting that match right. Yeah. And what's good for one person may be really bad for another person.
Yeah, now we got a family up the road from us, and they got a, it's a kind of a bulldog. Yeah, a boxer, I suppose it is.
Mm-hmm.
A strong animal. Now, I'm not sure if they got it for the kids or the parents, but each day I now see the dad being taken for a walk by this incredibly strong animal.
Yeah.
Hauling him around the park. I mean, it's just, and I think the dad kind of enjoys it in a funny sort of a way, but it's definitely a strong animal.
Yeah, it wouldn't be everybody's cup of tea, that sort of creature. I mean, I suppose that the other point is that choosing the right dog is only the first part of what's going on. Yes. Second thing is you have to learn to manage the dog well. Yeah. And that generally means a lot more dog training and a lot more exercise for the animal than most people actually do.
Yeah.
You should be spending around 15 minutes every day training your dog long term. Now, you don't need to do that all at once, but what I mean is even 5 minutes, three times a day, doing obedient stuff with your dog, walking them on the leash beside you, getting them to sit and stay, getting them to come back when called. You should be repeating that for around 15 minutes every day. If you do that, then there'll be far less being hauled around the park and far more walking with the dog around the park. And that's more fun generally.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I suppose, you know, when it comes to dog breeds, beauty in the eye of the beholder. But I suppose that's what you're kind of really saying is, at a practical level, what capacity do you have to give time to the animal to exercise it? And some dogs, I guess, just need a whole lot more exercise than others.
They really do. I mean, I think most dogs need around half an hour twice a day. That's the kind of ideal for the average dog. But if you get a Dalmatian, which was bred as a coach dog to run beside a stagecoach, yeah. that breed has got huge amounts of energy, and they could happily run for 3 hours a day. Yeah. And now you compare that perhaps with a little Chihuahua who is like a lap dog who couldn't walk for a mile without getting a little bit puffed. Yeah. So, you know, you do need to look at how much you're prepared to do and choose an animal appropriately. But a lot of people, you can't tell. They think they know themselves, yeah, and they have it in their head what they want. Yeah, and so, yeah, so for those people, this guy, this graphic is quite a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. Was there any surprises on the graphic for you, Pete?
I think I see that the Irish Wolfhound is kind of verging on the inexplicably overrated section, but I like Irish Wolfhounds, and I wouldn't put them there. I would say they're hot dogs. I think they're fabulous dogs, magnificent creatures. Yeah. Not for everybody, but if you've got the right situation at home, then I think they're just wonderful creatures.
They're pretty big, aren't they, the Irish Wolfhound?
They're giants. They're massive.
Fantastic. Now, speaking of dog breeds, you've been writing a lot recently about a particular health concern for flat-faced dog breeds. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Well, flat-faced dog breeds, which are technically called brachycephalic dogs, and brachy means short and cephalic means head, so short-headed dogs. Yeah. These are dogs like pugs, bulldogs, French bulldogs. So they've been bred specially to have compressed faces. So they have got snub noses. Yeah. And this gives them a unique and distinctive appearance. Yeah. They tend to have bulgy eyes, sort of spherical heads. Yeah. Psychologists tell us that they resemble babies, human babies, and that's one of the reasons why we find them so cute and adorable and appealing. But whatever, they tend to be comical, playful, delightful little dogs. But the problem is, though, that in the process of their anatomy being redesigned in this way to make them look cute and adorable, the functionality of their breathing passages has been disrupted.
Okay.
And what it means is that they've got narrowed and twisted breathing passages, and it means that they then have difficulty breathing. And an extreme example, there's one little dog that I was treating that when he got excited, he couldn't get enough oxygen, and he'd actually collapse on the ground and begin to suffocate because he couldn't get enough oxygen to cope. And he actually ended up having to have a permanent tracheostomy. In other words, a hole made in his windpipe underneath his head and his neck, so that the air now comes and goes through that hole rather than through his nasal passages, because they were just too narrowed for him to breathe through. So this is he was an extreme example of a syndrome which is called the brachycephalic obstructive airway syndrome, or BOAS. And what they found is that for the breeds that we've mentioned, for bulldogs, French bulldogs, and pugs, over 50% of these breeds are affected by this syndrome. Okay. And so really, that's just too high. And the breeds are getting more and more popular. And the problem is that people often get these dogs without realizing the health issues concerned. Yeah. And they have to then go on and spend loads of money at vets for reconstructive surgery to make the airways more functional. And people should be aware of that before getting a breed like that.
Okay, so, I mean, this is kind of really interesting, because I guess I never really thought about, you know, a dog breed being bred to look a certain way because of an appeal. I just thought there was some historic thing and that's the way they were. But, I mean, therefore, sort of, can, you know, where does breeding come into it? Can we breed out this health issue? Is there a way that you can kind of...
Absolutely, you can. And that's why I've been writing about it, to try to put a bit of pressure on the authorities, if you like, who design the shape of dogs, to persuade them to redesign these breeds a bit so that they're more healthy.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, you know, if only 10% of them had obstructive airway disease, then that would be much better than 50%.
Yeah.
And so the problem is that we don't yet know exactly how they need to be redesigned in order to make them breathe more easily.
Yeah.
And so there's a little bit of a challenge to that, to us in that way. But the other thing is, people become welded to the particular appearance that's there right now because they like it and they don't like to change that. And so that's the kind of resistance that we're meeting. People think that we people accuse me of hating the breed. I don't hate the breed. I just hate the fact that so many of them suffer from discomfort and distress because of the way they've been designed.
Okay. Well, boy, that's really fascinating. Now, veganuary. For the last couple of years, you've participated in, I don't know if I'm going to say this right, Veganuary. Are you doing it again this year? And what's it all about?
Like you've just said, I've been doing this for a few years. It's become a bit of a trendy thing, though, in that time. And this year, it's quite a lot of people have gone vegan for the month of January. Last year, there was 50,000. This year, I think it's going to be over 100,000, whatever. For me, it's about... I'm a meat eater. I like eating meat. And as long as animals have had good lives, and as long as they've died without pain or fear or suffering, then I don't have a particular problem with that. I see the sheep grazing in the fields of County Wicklow, and I think, well, you know, those sheep are having a better life than many humans, you know? And as long as they have those good lives and then they die without being distressed, then I think, well, you know, we're all going to die sometime. Is it that big a deal? A lot of vegans would take a much more principled stance that it's simply wrong to eat any meat or to use any animal product. I don't take that view in my daily life generally. But for the month of January every year, I take a vegan stance and I say, well, okay, what's life like living without using any animals for anything? What's life like with no dairy, no eggs, no honey? Because you can't eat honey because it comes from bees, and therefore why should we be allowed to eat it? And no meat, obviously. So I experience a month every year of vegan life, and I find it fascinating, and it just re-educates me about, you know, what goes into our food. We tend to just buy stuff in the supermarkets and put it into our shopping trolleys and not really necessarily look at the ingredients. Yeah. So when you're vegan, you have to examine the ingredients in detail, and that's a real learning experience.
Okay.
And by the way, the interesting thing about veganism is, used to be people just became vegans because they're concerned about animal welfare, but then there are two new trends, and one of them is people are becoming vegan for health reasons. So if you've got high cholesterol, for example, going vegan is a really easy way of cutting down on obviously on the animal fats you're eating, and that can have a really positive effect on your cholesterol. And so health is one reason, and the other reason is the environment, and especially a lot of young people are saying to themselves, what can I do to help this environment around us? And they're saying, well, meat production causes huge production of greenhouse gases, so if I stop eating meat, I won't be creating any of those anymore. And so environment and health are two really big new reasons why people are becoming vegan.
Very interesting. Well, I guess this will be one to watch then, to keep an eye on it. Okay, brilliant. Did you find it easier this year than the first year you tried it?
I've learned. The big thing I've learned is you can't just turn up in a restaurant or any sort of eatery and expect them to provide vegan food. If you're going to eat out, you should phone them a few hours beforehand and say, listen, I'm going to come along later on. Can you have something vegan for me, ready for me? And people, once you do that, people are very happy to help you.
Fascinating. Yeah. Okay. Listen, Peter, joy to have you with us, and look forward to having you again sometime in the near future.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.